Good morning. All right. I'm hoping you guys aren't tired of our series yet. We've been in this series, Gospel, for 2 years now. This will be 2 years, right, this Sunday. We've been in this series, and we're like only to like chapter 11 of like all four of the Gospels. I don't know how that works, but here's where we're at. I really like this series personally, though. I'm sorry if you think it's too long. We did, though, commit to a 5,200-part series on Jesus when we started this church. We're going to talk about him for the first 100 years and then see what happens. So I think it's going swimmingly, focusing on Jesus. So let's get going. This is our chapter this morning. It's from Luke chapter 11, verse 37. If you have the bulletins around you, or if you need one, raise your hand. There's the tables. On the back of those bulletins has the notes and the scriptures that we're using this morning. So if you would like one, grab one of those, or please somebody hand one of those to someone else. Here we are, Luke chapter 11, verse 37. Here's what it says. When Jesus had finished speaking, a Pharisee invited him to eat with, or invited him in, or him to eat with him. Jeez Louise. And so he went in and reclined at the table. But the Pharisee was surprised when he noticed that Jesus did not first wash before the meal. So we know right away from that verse that Jesus is not a hand washer, right? He was, just kidding. Sorry, my nurses, what is happening down here? All right, there we go. This isn't just about washing hands, though. This moment isn't just about, like, my wife saying, well, she's a nurse, wash your hands, Ryan. This is, like, something else. There is a ceremonial thing. This is a specific religious thing that the religious leaders expected Jesus to do, and Jesus simply does not do it. Okay, moving on, verse 39. Then the Lord said to him, Now then, you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness, you foolish people. Okay, this is kind of crazy. Seriously, this guy invites Jesus over to his house for dinner, and then all he does is maybe make a face. Like, he doesn't say anything to Jesus. It just says he noticed and was surprised, and then Jesus just yells at him. Like, he had invited to his home for dinner. I know when we read the scriptures, we like read, like, it's just words on a page like any other words on a page. You would never be this confrontational in your life, you guys. Ever. Unless you're in a car, okay? Right? This is the only time. It's the only time we talk like, you foolish people. Like, you would never go to someone's home who invited you in for dinner and just lay into them like that. It's so bizarre. He says, you blind fool. It's rough. And these are the wise, these are the learned, respected people in the community. They were the popular kids. The Pharisees, even though there were people that, you know, nobody liked the popular kids, right? But y'all liked them, right? You know what I'm talking about? The Pharisees were the cool kids. They were the ones that were respected, and everybody looked up to them, and they knew. Jesus was at Jay-Z's house, okay? He's hanging at the Obamas. Neil deGrasse Tyson's next to him, and he's like, you blind fool! Like, these are the folks that he's laying into, the respected people. You can't talk to them like that, Jesus. That's what I'm saying. We have this connotation of the Pharisees on this side that's like, they're the bad guys, right? We know it. No, in this story, this was a very big moment. Whoa, you're being invited to a Pharisee's house, and he just lays right into him, calls him a fool to his face. Then he goes on and says, did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? But now, as for what is inside you, be generous to the poor, and everything will be clean for you. So there's some sort of tradition and ritual here that the religious leaders see as very, very important, and Jesus just kind of literally just blows it off, just doesn't do it at all. And then he yells at them for cleaning a cup wrong and being filled with greed and wickedness. Can anybody here see why this guy was killed, right? He's not making friends. This is not how it works. This word foolish that Jesus used to speak to the Pharisees, this is a loaded word in the Hebrew world. A fool at that time is essentially someone who denies God's existence by their actions. That's what this term was loaded with. We would say, you know, you're a dumb idiot, you're a fool, da-da-da, it's all the same things. No. Jesus wasn't just mean, like, putting them down, right? It kind of seems like that. He's just like, you jerks. Like, no, he's using a very loaded term to say, you're missing it. You are missing it. You are missing the reality of who you're trying to be as the people of God. Your life is denying his existence. It's a profound thing to say to somebody that's not said lightly. And then he says this kind of haiku thing where he says, the one who made the outside made the inside as well, right? It's kind of this like weird little poetic moment. And then he says something similar to last week. Last week he said, if you give to the poor, if you're generous, then everything will be good for you. Everything will be clean. He says that again this week. There's some sort of mechanism of generosity for Jesus that purifies and transforms us from the inside out. Again, similar to last week, we have a parallel passage to this passage in Luke. All the Gospels have, many of them record similar stories in different ways. We have a parallel passage in Matthew chapter 23. This is what Matthew says. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. So the Luke version is greed and wickedness. Matthew version is greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, Jesus says, first clean the inside of the dish and the cup, then the outside will be clean as well. So once again in this passage, Jesus has stepped into the middle of like a religious dispute about a tradition. Now, in those days, way back in the day, in Jesus' days, religious people would get into really passionate debates and arguments about finer points, very minute details surrounding religious matters. Very different from today, by the way, right? We don't do that at all anymore. Religious people never do that, right? So Jesus steps into this religious debate that has two very clear sides. And as I've been reading through the Gospels in this series, you get to these parts where Jesus says something or does something, and then it says afterwards, and then they wanted to kill him. Right? Right? And sometimes you read them, you're like, why did that make him want to kill? Like, what is the issue here? Right? Usually, that's because Jesus took a side. He took a side, seemingly, in this religious moment, in this debate, and it ticks people off. It ticks folks off. In Jesus's day, there were progressives and there were traditional conservatives. Again, very different from today. And now for us to understand, though, the kind of landmine that Jesus steps into here, we need to understand what the Jewish world was like that he lived in, this world that he's talking to. First, in Jesus's world, all life is sacred. And that sounds cliche and like a platitude these days, but for Jesus and in the ancient Near East, all life was sacred. Central, it's like central to the Torah, the first five books of the Bible that the entire religion was based on. Central to it is this reality that all life is sacred. There is no compartments in the world of Jesus. They would have no context or they would have no concept of the question, how's your spiritual life, right? When you get together with somebody you haven't seen in a while, you talk about da-da-da-da-da, and maybe one of you will say, oh, how's your spiritual life? And you're like, oh, now we're talking about God. Like, it's like a different thing. That would be like totally unrelated. They could have no idea what you're talking about in Jesus' world. All life is lived in the presence of God. What do you mean, my spiritual? What are you talking about? All of this is sacred. The earth is God's and everything in it. It all belongs to him. It all is sacred. It's all God. So the Hebrew word for spirit even is the same word for breath. That so close was their spiritual understanding and connection to the divine that every breath was a reminder of the gift of the divine. That this spirit, this is a gift. I haven't earned this. I haven't gotten this. This isn't just this physical thing. This is all spiritual, all divine. So in our world, we have like our life, our job, our family, our kids, our friends, our hobbies, and then our God stuff maybe, right? And sometimes God's on part of them. Like, well, God does some stuff in my hobbies. I don't know, right? But like, it's weird. We have all of these different kind of compartments, and it's like, you know, we have to kind of switch this understanding. Like, oh, we're here now. It's God time. We're in church now. It's God, right? This would have been totally foreign to them, totally foreign to them. Everything, what you eat, what you wear, how you conduct your business, how you work with your hands, your money, your sex life, the ways in which you live and interact with the earth, the environment, all of it was sacred because all of it was from God. So in Deuteronomy, they say things like, teach your children as you walk along, as you go beside the road, as you do the things you do. In your normal flow of life, you're endlessly listening to the voice and open to the voice of God. You're endlessly trying to have eyes to see the divine in your midst right now because all life is sacred. The earth is God's and everything in it, right? This is part of what we try and do here. I know it seems like we're trying to just experimenting. However, the experiment is for this exact purpose. It's for us to remind ourselves, this isn't the God time, and then we're done and we get to go to the pub. Or like, this is the God time, and then we're done and we go out in our life. No, all of our life is the God time. Worst words I could use. But all of our life is sacred, and the reminder is as we do our empty service, as we go out and we feed people, as we go out and we pack lunch bags, as we go out and we clean garbage, that is sacred as much as praying, as much as studying our scriptures, as much as when we raise our hands in worship. Whatever the most spiritual act you could think of, all of it's spiritual. Is this making sense? I'm hammering it home hard. Sorry. Okay. And second to this, this is interesting. All life is sacred, right? All things are sacred. And food is essential for life, right? Food is actually essential. Good food, I would say, is essential for life. But food in general is essential. So the table, the meal in the Jewish tradition, in the Hebrew tradition, this was a place where you encountered, in a very tangible way, the simple truth that all life is sacred. You get to encounter this truth in a tangible, physical way. In fact, in the Jewish home, the table was known as the altar, because it was where you would gather. It was where you would gather with your friends, your family, to celebrate, to partake. Food comes from the earth. The earth is God's and everything in it. Food sustains you. Literally, you don't die when you eat. This is why we eat, right? All of this, and it's a miracle. It is an absolute miracle. We don't understand any of this stuff. Like, I plant a seed in the ground, and I put a little dirt over it, and then, you know, if the right amount of rain falls from the sky, and the right amount of like light just from the sky comes, a few months later, I have salsa. How? What in the miracle is that? Like, it's crazy. It is an absolute miracle. Think about the world that Jesus lived in at that time. It was an absolute miracle. Nobody understands this. Even now that we do know how it works, we still don't know how it works, right? We don't have any. It's a miracle every time. It's this beautiful, crazy cycle of life and death, and the earth provides this stuff, and we put it in us, and it sustains us. And so this meal became this central to the understanding, or this understanding and reflection, that all of life is provided, all of life is sustained by God. And so this is a sacred practice we get to do. We get to do it every day. Some of us much more than others, right? We get to partake in this sacred ritual every day and remind ourselves that we are connected to this earth that is connected to this God, that all is all God and all sacred and all good. Are you catching what I'm saying? It is this reminder to be tied to this. So what happens, though, is over time, religious folks thought, well, this is a sacred thing. So we ought to approach this meal very, very carefully. We should approach the meal with concern, respect, to be as honoring as possible. So over time, the ways in which you prepared for the meal, the ways in which you washed your hands specifically, the prayers you said as you prepared the meal, and then the ways in which you served the prepared meal. So there's the bowls, then there's the cups, then there's the dish, and then, well, the way in which you clean the cup, and then the way in which you clean the dish, and the way in which you wash yourself before or after. And then, so what happens is, over time, all these things become added on to this beautiful, simple truth that all life is sacred. Added onto it were layer upon layer of religious ritual and duty, and you would go through all these things before you ate the meal. And so, you know, what happened is the central truth got lost. the beauty and the mystery got lost in all the legalism and rules surrounding it. Again, very different from nowadays, right? Very different. So there was one group that was arguing passionately that this is the way you do it. You got to clean the inside of the cup, and then the cup is clean. And then there's another group that said, no. For the cup to be clean, you have to clean both the inside and the outside, and you have to go through two very distinct rituals. One helps you clean the inside properly. One helps you clean the outside properly. They're different. And so you would sit down with these two groups before you would even get to the meal. There would be the washing of this. There would be the prayer for that, the washing of that, now the prayer for this, and then the washing for that, and the prayer. It would be this long, drawn out, like all these things to do. By the time the meal was there, you didn't want to eat anymore. You missed the whole point. I'm supposed to be grateful? That's what this is all about? I'm supposed to be a reminder that this is like a gift that I'm tied to? Like, it became just a mundane ritual. Nowhere in the scriptures was this required. It was just something they added on over the years. So that by the time Jesus shows up on the scene, he dines with the Pharisees. There's these two schools of thought now. One school was the Hillelites. They followed Rabbi Hillel, who said, just clean the inside of the cup. All you got to do, I have a cup. Just clean the inside, and then it's clean. You're good. Okay, that was the Hillelites. The other school was the Shemites. And they said, no, you have to clean the inside, of course, but you also have to clean the outside. An incredibly arcane, detailed argument that lost most people in all the details of it. Nevertheless, Jesus charges right into this and just doesn't do any of it. Like, just doesn't do any of it. Doesn't wash his hands the right way or the wrong way. Just doesn't do it at all. It's highly offensive. Highly offensive right away. And like, Jesus, you're rejecting all of these endless rules that we've built up. And instead of defending himself, right, instead of saying, you know what, you missed the point, man, like, food's sacred, like, that's the whole point of it, right? Instead of like trying to re-educate them or teach them or anything, instead he turns it on them and he says, you know what your problem is? I'm going to tell you what your problem is, right? Woe to you, woe to you. You make all this effort to clean the cup, and then he spins it. He says, he makes the cup about their own souls. So the actual story in the debate is about a literal frickin' cup. Like, that's what God cares about, right? And Jesus says it's not about any, like, he reminds what it's all about. He makes it about the human condition, our own souls. Your cup, Jesus says, your cup is filled with greed. Your cup is filled with self-indulgence and wickedness. You religious people have become so obsessed with how things look on the outside, how you look on the outside, how people see you, that your inside is filled with all sorts of stuff that is unclean and gross. He calls them foolish, blind guides. How are you ever going to lead people into the life of God when you're so obsessed with the rules and the outside looks? You hypocrites, Jesus said. Then he adds this interesting thing. He says that if you would give to the poor, then the inside of your cup will be clean and everything will be great. It's a weird little thing he says at the end. So first, some of the words Jesus uses here. Jesus calls them hypocrites. This word is the word that I think probably the first time anybody ever used it for religious people, right? We never use that word. I'm just kidding. Hypocrite is like another term for religious folks nowadays, it seems like, right? That is what we, in the Greek, it's the word hupokrinomai. Hupo meaning under, krino meaning to judge or to distinguish or to separate. So a hypocrite is someone who pretends someone who acts or impersonates someone else. It's actually a term from the classical Greek language from the theater. It was what the person, a hypocrite was someone who would wear the mask. They're pretending to be another character. They put this false facade on, and now in reality, there's someone else, but what they're presenting is this other person, right? Someone who is putting an act on a stage. So when Jesus says, you hypocrite, he's saying, you act, you pretend. You put on this false mask so that people will think you're one way, but actually you're someone else. Then he uses this word greed. This word greed is the word harpazo, and it means to seize with force. It's like taking something. It literally has to do with this unquenchable desire for more, just this that need, right? And another word that he uses, self-indulgence, which means without strength. Essentially, it's being unable to control one's appetites. It's when you have these urges, when you have addictions, when you have destructive habits in ways a person has something that they want, but they cannot control themselves. They cannot keep themselves from it, and they fall every time. And Jesus says, your problem is that you act like everything's fine, but you're hypocrites. You're hypocrites. You're not fine. The last word he uses is the word fool, which is ephrons, and that just means that it's without understanding. You have no understanding. You do not get it. You're very quickly, go back to Luke 11, the verse that we're looking at, because Jesus once again gives this strange prescription in verse 41. He says, but now, as for what is inside you, be generous to the poor, and everything will be clean for you. Seems like an odd thing to say. The reason is because many of the people that Jesus was speaking to in this moment were very wealthy. Jesus was speaking to a higher class of folks. These were the folks that had their tickets to Firefest. They were ready to go. While at the same time, there were people all around them that were hungry, that were in need. And so Jesus addresses those who have plenty, and essentially in this context he says, you have so much because you've taken from those who do not have enough. And so the reason why your cup is filled with greed is that you take and take and take while others don't have enough. And the solution is to be generous. The solution is to give to those who do not have enough. And miraculously, Jesus says, it's like miraculously things will change from the inside out. So for this particular group and time, Jesus' response is there's something you can actually do. You can actually stop being greedy and actually start being generous. You can do something here and that will change you. So, quickly I'm going to end with this. What does this mean for us today? This is a debate from centuries ago. There is obviously a metaphysical kind of correlation that Jesus is bringing, that there is an inside and an outside, right? There's something here. I think what Jesus does is he takes this everyday thing and he turns it into a metaphor for the human experience, that there is something, there is an inside to each of us, and that there is an outside. There's an inner life for all of us, the hidden life, legitimately, and there is an outer life to all of us. So there are the parts that nobody sees. There are thoughts, our hopes, our pasts, our fears, our intentions, our longings, our lusts, our habits, our addictions. There's this inside part to the human being. And then there are the parts that everybody else sees. There's the outside part. And the central woe for Jesus, for them and for us this morning, if he's going to say woe to any of us, his central woe is that the Pharisees are split. He says, you see the world and outside as like what you present to the world on the outside and what you are on the inside is incongruous. He's saying who you are and what you demonstrate and present to others is untrue. You say one thing, but you do something else. So Jesus is saying there's an inside to us and an outside. And his central complaint with the Shemites was you clean the outside one way, and then there's like another rule for the inside. You treat the inside and the outside as if they're two different dimensions of the cup. And Jesus is arguing to them, there is only one cup. It's just one cup. There's no difference inside and outside. It is one cup. You don't need to, it's integrated in that way. Does that make sense? So what Jesus is really inviting us to, inviting the Pharisees, inviting all of us to right now, is living an undivided life. A life that has the difference in the inside and the outside is, there is no difference. They're the same. Do we have things? Do you have things on the inside that nobody knows about? Like nobody, I can't tell anybody about that, right? Are there fears that you have? Are there darkness, pain, wounds, anger, addictions, sins, wickedness? Is there destructive lies that you've believed are true and you keep them on the inside, but I can't tell anybody because I don't want to share that with anyone else. But you're believing it, you're knowing it, you're living it, but it's inside your cup. We live in a culture that says it's all about the outside of the cup. We really do. And I'm not just talking about physical looks. I'm talking about how you talk, the words you use. There's a current kind of culture right now. It's like, if you just have the right language, I feel like, you're good. Even if inside you could hate every single one of these people you're using the right word for now, you're doing fine. You're not offending people with your language. On the outside, you're doing great. Inside, you could be filled with all sorts of darkness. It's an interesting moment. I think that maybe we're trying to move past the physical looks. We're trying to appreciate body image things. We're trying to feel like we're woke, right? We're trying to feel like we've moved past this external judgment. BS. Like BS. I know for a fact there's like a couple words that any of us could use anytime and we would be shamed forever. And yet, inside we could be. You could use all the right words, but inside have this hatred, this like bigotry, this all these things. It's like we thought, oh, I just gotta fix the outside. I just gotta fix the outside. I just gotta learn how to get along in this world. But inside, that's my thing. That's my world. Jesus is inviting us to live an undivided life. That who we are inside is who we are on the outside. And it doesn't start with the outside for Jesus. It starts with working on what's in here. Taking a look at what is going on in our own hearts and asking, is there a mask that I'm putting on to others? Is there a mask I'm putting on to myself? Do I come here and, you know, on the church Sundays and just say, hi, oh, good, you? Oh, great. You can do that. We can all do that. That's totally fine. But Jesus is inviting us to live an undivided life where we can actually be honest. I pray more than anything that especially here in a faith community, that we can be honest with each other. That we can say, I don't believe any of this shit right now. And just say it. And just say it, guys. And be honest about it. And not go, oh, I won't say that there. I'll talk, oh, I'm having a hard time. Kind of struggling. I'm growing, though. Can we be honest? Can we give grace and freedom to each other to say, I want to know who you are, not who that is, right? This is our opportunity. This is what we get to do. I love that we get to do it in a community, in a faith community, in a small setting where we can know each other, where we say we're going to have lunch, we're going to eat together, we're going to talk to each other and learn about what's going on in our lives. We're going to support one another and share the tough things, the fears that we have, the joys and the victories that we're getting. That's what this life is about. And an undivided life, it only works when you're living with others. Because you're not going to be undivided if you're living by yourself, if you have no interaction with others. It's all in there. It's all you. It doesn't matter. I'm talking about when we actually are connected in community, guess what? You got to be known. And Jesus says he wants to know you and he wants you to be known. And this is why he put this whole thing together. All right? You guys catching what I'm saying? I'm wandering. All right, let's pray. Lord, thank you for this morning. Thank you for your invitation. You invite us right now, not like after we learn more, after we grow more, after we, well, you can't keep holding on to that anger and then you can come in. There's no process we have to go through before you invite us to be undivided, before you invite us to be in your presence, to be known, to be seen. Right now, who we are, you welcome us exactly for who we are. Jesus, please help us to come to draw near to you. Help us to see you. Help us to see each other. And help us to take our masks off. That we would be a cup that is cleaned inside and out. Or if it's dirty, let it be seen. Let it be known so that we can find help and find support and find love and care in community. We lift you up, we lift each other up, and we say, amen.
May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine. Give you his peace.